T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I'm going to criticize ownership for not spending. I think partly Theo deserves some criticism for what he spent last offseason, keeping them from bringing the best relievers up right now. Alan Webster should probably be on this team right now. Dylan Maples should probably be on this team right now. There are guys that should be on this team. Perhaps they don't have the best pitchers up that are in their organization. We're going to see all these guys. We're going to see a lot of different guys throughout the season. When that happens, how urgent they are going to be with those things, that's what we have to see. I really think that's a little bit of a concern right now. You don't want to get sunk in April because of the bullpen. You just don't want to see a dreadful start because of one unit not picking up its weight.
Middays on the Score.
That's the voice of Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic laying it out for you, telling you some Cubs truth. And there's no good moves right now, it seems, that Joe Maddon can make. Every single thing blows up in his face like a loaded comic cigar.
I think he knows it, too. I mean, look at the decisions that were left to Joe last night. I mentioned a couple of them, Dan. Brandon Kinsler had worked 3 of 4 going into that game. Steve Cishek, same thing, 3 of 4 going into that one. Brad Brock would have been 3 straight had he pitched, and Mike Montgomery pitching made it 3 of 4. So your options... Where C.J. Edwards trying to figure it out, Carl Edwards Jr. trying to figure it out, and then Tyler Chatwood working in long relief, and then going to Mike Montgomery.
I don't like it.
So you've got Yu Darvish, who needs to be handled the way he was handled last night. I think Joe did the right thing. If you want to argue that he should have taken him out before the walk, I get it. Jay's of that opinion. I hear that. I absolutely hear it. But I don't know that he's got better options. But did it feel to anybody else like he just kind of showed you what was up?
What do you mean?
He went from Darvish to Edwards to Chatwood. If anybody's out there thinking, no, you got to let Yu Darvish work through that, you got to let him, you know, your starters have to last that third time through the order. This team is built that way. For those of you who feel that, raise your hand. Now, if you're driving, don't do it. You need to 10-2. Is 10-2 safe anymore? Did we change that as a country? Are we not doing 10-2 anymore?
I thought I heard recently it's more like 9-3.
9-3 on either side? Makes. I've always been the under, you know, driver. Right?
I've just got like a thumb on the bottom.
Just do the thumb
wheel.
On the bottom. Use a knee or something like that while you're sipping on a
My
slushy.
My dad sometimes when we were on the highway would play cards with us and drive with his knees.
That seems unsafe.
That seems awesome. I'm sorry.
He was so used to driving semis that driving a regular car was just
really?
Like, oh yeah. My dad was an over-the-road truck driver for 30 years.
That's a professional.
So were you playing bridge? I'm wondering how complicated is the card game here?
I think we would play mostly like 5-card poker or rummy.
Some fantastically complicated card game.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like contract
three-handed
bridge.
Pinochle.
Right. Euchre, and he's keeping score while driving. It's up there on the dash.
That's awesome.
That is pretty great. It kind of feels like that's what Joe's doing, is driving with a knee down the highway. That's all he's got.
Well,
that's the margin between the two.
Let's call it what it is. You sensed there was a little passive-aggressive
FU like
in
it,
that.
Didn't
like,
it?
Oh, okay. I mean,
you went from Darvish to Edwards, to Chatwood. Felt to me like Joe was kind of airing some things out. As much as they were airing things out, it felt like Joe's kind of airing some things out. Now, granted, the games prior would lead you to believe that those were the options that were left to you in that game. You'd like for Darvish to obviously get through more than just the fifth inning or into the fifth inning before he's starting to crank that lineup around for the third time. That didn't happen. He's left to the guys who are going to walk people. And if you thought Yu Darvish should have gotten deeper into that ballgame, should have been allowed to pitch longer, raise your hand if you thought that and you thought that he'd get through it. I don't think there's a lot of middle ground in that Venn diagram.
It didn't feel like he was getting through it because you know how things go with him.
And I still thought he pitched a lot better this time out than last time.
Yeah, things start to go, and when he has an it's always has had a difficult time getting back on the good side of something snowballing on him. You know what I have here? I have your White Sox lineup for their home opener at Guaranteed Rate Field today. If you were curious, Ricky's boys today will look like this. Leury Garcia will lead off and play right field. Tim Anderson bats second. He's at short. Jose Abreu at first. Wellington Castillo will bat cleanup and catch. Yoan Moncada at third. Eloy Jimenez in left. Yonder Alonso, the designated hitter. Jose Rondon is at second base. Adam Engel in center. That's your lineup ahead of Reynaldo Lopez.
Ooh, and the Mariners send Yusei Kikuchi to the mound, who I've not gotten to watch, but once or twice. He's a fun watch. So the White Sox and Mariners are excellent afternoon baseball for you today.
And look, Mariners are 7-1 team, in case you missed it. In case you haven't been paying attention, the Mariners are 7-1. They'll have Malik Smith, Mitch Haniger, Domingo Santana, Jay Bruce, Tim Beckham, former White Sox Omar Narvaez is their catcher. Ryan Healy, big Dan Vogelbach is their DH. And
it's the Pacific Northwest's large adult son, Dan Vogelbach, right? That's how that's what we're doing with him now. But look at the standings all throughout baseball, right? My Orioles, they're 4-3 and a game back at the top of the American League East. The Rays are at 5-2. The Yankees are a game under, and the Red Sox are 2-6. That makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? The Astros are 2-5. I'll say that again because I think it's worth saying. The Houston freaking Astros are 2-5. You've got the Cubs, obviously, at 1-5. The Diamondbacks are 3-4. They weren't expected to do much. The Dodgers are really the only, right? I mean, really the only expected dominant team who are expectedly dominant, and they're hitting home runs like they're going out of style. I mean, they're just absolutely murdering baseballs left and right. So to get back to the decision that Joe has to make out of the bullpen, I found it interesting to look through, and a texter pointed it out. I probably should have read the lines of Alan Webster, Dylan Maples, and Dakota Meeks when I mentioned that all three of them pitched in Iowa's first game. Maples wasn't very good, two-thirds of an inning, gave up two runs, walked three, struck out two. That's kind of a Dylan Maples line. But, you know, you heard Sahadev Sharma in the cut coming back that Webster, Maples, and Meeks are guys that really might need to be in this bullpen soon. And if you're asking what decision can be made to go along with the urgency that the Cubs have talked about all through spring training, like Joe's urgency is just trying to manage this bullpen right now. I mean, that's all he can do. He's just got to try and keep the lid on this thing as best he can.
He's told us he wakes up thinking about the bullpen.
So it's all he's got to do.
If I do that, I would throw up.
Well, he might. I mean, that could be. That's a tough morning.
I would wake up. I would think about the bullpen. I would throw up, and I would go hide under the covers.
Roll over and sleep more. Yep. Yeah. Then you just slowly start to eat some eggs, a little bit of coffee. That's a rough morning.
Or I'm into the redemption rye at that point.
Oh, that's good stuff, too.
Yeah.
Did you? I tasted a little last night during the ball game.
Oh, did you?
Just poured a little bit. You know, just a little, just a like two fingers, maybe a small thing of ice, just to get it down to temperature.
Do you get like the hipster gourmet ice cubes?
No, I don't.
Special whiskey ice cubes?
I don't,
cubes.
But they do. Here's the thing. Don't judge me for this. Or do. I don't care. They do make a difference.
I have been told the same.
They do make a difference. Now, I've not gotten, what do you call them, whiskey rocks? You know, they're either actual rocks or steel cubes that you put in the freezer so that it doesn't water it down, but it does make it colder. I've not gone that far.
No, I've been told you're supposed to water it down a little bit.
I've always liked it more with just like a drop of water.
That it opens.
Yeah, whether it's my scotch or my whiskey or whatever, just a drop, maybe two, just to kind of let it sit and open up a little bit.
The 224 texter disagrees with you, McKnight.
Okay,
I don't think Joe is making these pitching decisions to be petty. I feel it's early in the season. He's seeing what he's got in high leverage situations, and I think we all knew what the outcome would be, Joe included. Nonetheless, you still need to see how guys will perform under that pressure.
Who's the guy, though? Yu Darvish under pressure, Carl Edwards under pressure, or Tyler Chatwood under pressure? Because I think you could make the argument for all three, and you did see some of them under pressure. He gave up the double, and then Yu Darvish walked him. That's under pressure. Message received. Carl Edwards comes in, can't find a breaking ball. Message received. Tyler Chatwood comes in, admittedly to the worst situation of the two guys, of the three guys, I mean, and you've got the rest of it. You know, that's what it is. So I think the most urgent decision that the front office has available to them, because we asked Jed Hoyer yesterday whether or not free agency is an option, because I think that question needs to be asked until the bullpen fixes itself. I think it's just kind of a, I know the answer is no. our
why do you say fixes
internal.
Itself? Why don't you say when Tommy Hotovy and Mike Borzello and the pitching infrastructure fix the bullpen?
Yeah, that's fair. I guess you could do that. But these are major league ball players too. I think there is an element of having to fix yourself. There's some risk in looking into the minor leagues at Maples, Meeks, and Webster, who have all had cups of coffee, not Meeks, and then said, okay, now it's on you guys with no major league experience, or at least very little, to fix what ails us. But what the worry has hit, right? What does Tyler Chatwood do for you?
Nothing.
Okay. I know you signed him to a whole lot of money, and I know that you are tied up as far as the budget goes. That's
cost,
your perspective.
Though. Sunk cost.
So do you want to sink the cost? Are you able to do that?
Are you walking out of a crappy movie?
Is that the bullpen that there's a bullpen move you're able to make, whether it's Meeks or Maples or Webster, is that a guy that you're willing to send down? Because that is going to, that decision, that kind of a decision with the salary attached to it, is going to speak loudly.
Yeah, but the sunk cost theory means the decision's already made. The cost is sunk. The money is paid. It's guaranteed money. That's there. The idea is, I paid $12 for this movie ticket, and even though this movie sucks, I'm going to sit here for the rest of the movie. No. You do what makes you happier. Mm-hmm. You are not getting your money back. You're not. Unless you're like a classic cinema within the first half hour, and they let you say there's too many explosions and your head hurts, and they give you your money back.
Does that work?
Or you're sick. Yeah, I know. I've heard the commercials before the regular guy on XRT. They're the big XRT advertiser. Apparently, they've got sort of a caveat in there that says,
joke.
For whatever reason, the first half hour of the movie, they'll let you out of your contract. Yeah.
I went to
it's a great policy.
When I was working baseball, I would go to like morning movies. They were like the first one.
Best.
And what I didn't realize, I went to go see one of the Marvel movies. I forget which one it was. Maybe one of the Thors, I think. Probably the bad one. And I went, and it was the lights were still on, and the volume was on like half.
Oh, brutal.
And I didn't realize what was. So I went to the person working the desk, and I'm like, what's going on? It's like, oh, well, for our first movie of the day, we have the lights on halfway, and we cut the volume down so that if parents with young kids, like super young, like babies, want to go to the movie, they can.
Oh, I get it.
So, and I was like, that's an awesome policy. I didn't see that on the I didn't know that. And they're like, oh, okay, cool. Here's a ticket for later. They give me like a comp ticket or whatever.
They have to.
Yeah, I didn't that's realize fair. That movie theaters did that. It's a sweet policy.
Or it's the old joke of up at that restaurant. The food is terrible and such small portions.
Right, yeah.
Right? So it's if you pay for a bad meal, and you say, well, I paid for it, so I'm going to finish it. That's dumb. That's kind of what you're doing with Tyler Chatwood here.
A little bit.
He's the bad meal you've decided you're going to keep eating.
Just keep on eating. Food poisoning be damned. I'm going to finish this sandwich.
That's like a Shane Reardon way of going through life.
Well, right? Sometimes you need to eat the sandwich because you made that decision.
Right.
So maybe you do need to punish yourself just a little bit.
Prove it to yourself.
Could be that's the 15 years Catholic school. I don't know. But sometimes I feel like you just have to punish yourself a little bit.
Everybody's saying the Thor movie, the bad one, they're all bad ones.
Well, that's not true. The first Thor is just delightful. Chris Hemsworth turns audiences' heads. Natalie Portman's great. What's-her-face is a little annoying throughout, but Stellan Skarsgård's always fun. The second one's terrible. Thor Ragnarok was great, though.
I haven't seen any of them.
You haven't seen any of those?
Any of the Thor movies.
Ragnarok's worth your time. You'll love it. A lot of Jeff Goldblum. Good stuff.
Okay. Didn't know that he was... Wait, Jeff Goldblum's in a Thor movie?
Yes, sir. Right? Yeah. I sold you already, haven't
and
I?
Is he doing the weird Jeff Goldblum
over
thing?
Over and over and over, yes. Time. Uh-huh. And he's got superpowers, sort of, kind of.
Really?
Yeah,
Is it neurosis?
Stuttering, believe it or not.
Stammering and neuroses are his superpowers.
That's what it is.
That dude, by the way, he is even weirder off screen.
Yes.
He actually has cirrhosis.
I'm telling you, he is even weirder. He's supposed to be a delightful guy.
Uh-huh, but crazy.
Totally.
He's crazy pants.
Daft.
He knits his own crazy pants. Yes. Like, that's how crazy pants the man is.
Yep. Daft.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe brilliant. Completely crackers.
Speaking of crackers, the midday midway is coming around. We got a couple funny ones. I have a story about Ichiro and a task from the NCAA that just did not need to be executed.
I have a television show being executive produced by Steph Curry. That is not what you think it is. I don't know how they focus grouped this, how they came up with it, but I think I'll sample it. I also have to tell people in a certain place, a certain national park, Stop falling. Just stop falling. And it's the 25th anniversary of something culturally significant.
Oh, the Midday Midway is next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670, The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Just trying to solve this Cubs thing one way or another, trying to figure out what's rational, what's not, as we sort of have gone through the looking glass here after last night. All of a sudden, they're facing Max Koufax, who's sticking it up their
giggy. He's good.
Yeah, he's good.
Max Fried, he has some stuff,
man. Yeah, it was a bad timing for that, setting up, of course, this now crucial, critical showdown with the Milwaukee Brewers, trying to be reasonable, trying to be rational, but understanding that sometimes things get weird in these situations, and things are feeling kind of weird right now. We had the contention by Connor McKnight that felt a bit of Joe Maddon making a point there. Oh, okay, let's see what I got in my bullpen. All right, let's go here. You want Chatwood? You want C.J. Edwards? Okay.
Are you not entertained? It felt like Russell Crowe walking out there in the middle of the arena. Just, are you not entertained?
And Eli Hershkovich gave you an Auburn-Michigan State final Monday night with Auburn prevailing.
Dan, I don't know how closely you've paid attention to the now 3-5 Toronto Blue Jays, but they won on Twitter last night. Now, the Blue Jays have been uncharacteristically active to begin the season. Mm-hmm. They traded Kevin Pillar to the Giants after opening day. They then extended Randall Grichuk and then released Bud Norris. Yay! So nobody likes Bud Norris. I don't think Bud... anyway. You've got a couple of transactions early on in the season that you don't often do. So before Thursday's game against the Indians, when Justin Smoke was scratched, there was a lot of wonderment going on for Blue Jays Twitter. So, one intrepid Blue Jays fan, at Year of the Vlad, because that is indeed what it is for the Blue Jays, tweeted at the Blue Jays and said, "Did you trade Smoke?" with an angry emoji and a crying emoji. The Blue Jays responded and said, "No, he has neck tightness and could be available to pinch hit if needed." Year of the Vlad comes back with, "Source? Question mark." Which,
to the actual team
weird
verified
flex,
account.
But okay. Right? Now the Blue Jays come back with, literally us, the Blue Jays. This has made itself viral because, oh my God, it's fantastic.
The guy doesn't realize you're actually tweeting the Blue Jays.
Do you know who you sent this to? Right. The Blue Jays. We're telling you, we scratched Justin Smoke. We didn't trade him. Oh, okay. I'll get a second source on that, and then I'll report it to my blog. But, you know, nice. Well done. You gotta report Twitter wins when they happen, because oftentimes it's like the Cubs bullpen, just a whole bunch of walks and darkness.
Steph Curry, as you know, is a scratch golfer. Loves golf. You can tell it has a kind of athletic tempo that lends itself.
Is he literally scratch?
Yes,
is he that good? I didn't realize he was that good.
Might be plus. Might be better than that.
I didn't know he was that good.
He has landed a deal to serve as executive producer for a new series that's going to air on ABC. It is called Holy Moly. It is a miniature golf competition series. He's going to appear as the show's resident golf pro, play-by-play man Joe Tessitore of Monday Night Football.
Oh, it's
going to
be loud then.
Along with Rob Riggle.
So extra loud.
Yes. On the show, contestants will try their luck on a series of super-sized mini-golf holes featuring three rounds of play, and each episode will end with three finalists taking on the daunting Mount Holy Moly finale.
It's like guts. Uniquely, the aggro crag at the end.
Uniquely themed holes will be featured every week, along with these special celebrity guest appearances and other surprises along the way, as they say. Keep you informed and entertained. At the end of each show, The winner will take home a $25,000 prize, the Golden Putter Trophy, and a holy moly.
Is it a Billy Baroo?
Whatever that.
Oh, Golden Putter?
Oh, Billy.
$80,000, Billy.
ABC Senior VP Rob Mills told Variety, everyone has a favorite memory of playing miniature golf, whether it was a child with your family, a group of friends, a teenager, or an awkward first date. Take that feeling, add high-stakes competition, and out-of-this-world challenges. We have no doubt that holy moly will stand alongside other golf classics like Caddyshack, Happy Gilmore, and The Legend of Bagger Vance. I'll check it out.
Absolutely.
I'll check it out. I did not know. It's actually, there's a computer game called Golf with Friends that my son plays. It's all these like whacked out miniature golf, multi-dimensional things.
And cool.
It also watches videos of other people playing it and people
that's
commenting
the thing.
On
kids
it.
Kids do now. We watch other people. Is it one of those, like you draw the mouse back to set the power inning? Is it a click kind of based putting game? How are the mechanics?
Yeah, I saw him using the keyboard.
Okay.
A lot of it just was watching other people play it.
So what service is Holy Moly on? It's going to stream, I assume?
No, ABC.
It's ABC. Oh, it's like it's a network.
Actual broadcast television show. Yes.
Just found this story fun. Following Ichiro through retirement or whatever his retirement is going to be might be more interesting than I otherwise thought. This from the AP. For the third time, baseball star Ichiro Suzuki has turned down a prestigious Japanese government award handed to stars in sports, entertainment, and culture. A Japanese government spokesperson said Friday that Ichiro, who retired last month with the Seattle Mariners, has declined what's called the People's Honor Award. The most recent winner was Olympic skating gold medalist Hanyu Yuzuru, who was named last year following the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. The first winner in 1977 was baseball player Sadahara Oh. New York Yankees star Hideki Matsui won the award in 2013. The 45-year-old Ichiro retired with 3,089 hits in the major leagues, 1,278 more in his career in Japan. He is sure to be the first Japanese baseball player inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's been nominated for this third time, for three different times, and he's turned it down each and every time. Ichiro is an unbelievably fascinating person.
Does he feel he is not worthy?
I have to admit, that was my first guess.
That would be very Japanese.
It would be very Ichiro. It would be very of the culture. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be close to what it is, or that it has to have some sort of source in it. It's really peculiar to me. And he's going to be around and part of the Mariners for a while. I think he's still working out with the team. I think he still gets to show up and do all the pregame stuff that he was doing
when he was in the stretching,
semi-retirement and all that kind of stuff. It's bizarre to me and really interesting.
Peng Chung.
How many people do you think die at the Grand Canyon every year on average?
I don't want to estimate that. Four or five?
12.
Oh, okay.
And according to the Park Service, the causes of those deaths range from heat to drowning to medical issues and more. High elevation plays a role in some of the fatalities. You know when else high elevation plays a role in fatalities? When you fall into the Grand Canyon.
Sure.
Because you got too close to the rim of the Grand Canyon.
Gotta do it.
That does it. So a 67-year-old man died after falling over the edge of the Grand Canyon. That brings the number to 3. The number of the falling shall be 3.
5 is right out.
3 deaths of the popular tourist destination in the past 8 days. The visitor fell Wednesday near the Yavapai Geology Museum, the south rim in Grand Canyon Village. They found his body 400 feet below the rim. He's a below-the-rim player. I've always said that about his game.
Why would you do that?
He also found Michael Sweetney down there.
They found Nico Miritich. Oh, Michael Sweetney. Definitely, his game is very much below the rim. But Grand Canyon National Park officials, in their statement, they have reminded visitors, and listen, okay? Listen. Keep a safe distance away from the edge of the canyon. Be extra cautious while taking pictures.
Yeah.
Or Instagramming.
Yeah. But sometimes the only way to really taste life is to throw your legs over the canyon, sit down, and really contemplate the distance.
And there's this. Stay behind railings at overlooks.
Definitely didn't do that. Have you been to the edge?
This is sort of like the woman that got her face eaten by the jaguar. Stay on the other side of the railing.
It's a little different than that. I mean, it's a little different.
The railing is there to keep you,
you should definitely
from falling,
stay on the other
and
side of the
dying. Railing.
Have you been up to the? Have you gone to the Grand Canyon? Been up to the rail?
I've flown over it. I've seen it from the air, but I've not been there.
No. I have gone to the rim a couple of times, and actually, we did one of the
go to the rim.
The cool, yeah.
Take it to the tin.
So I've done that, and we also did as a family the one cool trip we really took. We went, kind of, well, there were other cool trips, but they were like the Dells and Myrtle Beach and stuff. We whitewater rafted down the river for like, it was a 3-day, 2-night thing.
That's cool.
Unbelievably amazing. I mean, just how large, it's just, and then you sleep in the Grand Canyon. You're out there in sleeping bags and cots and whatnot, and you're just there. And it's very, very bright because it's the desert. It's a full moon, that kind of thing. And then what you see as you look up is you get a moonrise and a moonset over each edge of the canyon gain and lose view of the... It's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Speaking of mind-blowing, the NCAA is at it again.
Yes.
You know Kyle Guy of Virginia?
Yes, he was just mentioned by Eli Hershkovich.
He proposed to his longtime girlfriend, Alexa Jenkins, last February.
Violation.
He's got a wedding... Mm-hmm. That's where we're headed here. He's got a wedding date set for this summer, following a season that's gone pretty well. It's from Deadspin. As couples tend to do, Guy and Jenkins put up a wedding registry so their friends and family could help outfit their marital home with the usual stuff. But according to Guy, the NCAA told him he had to take down his wedding registry. Here's the quote from Guy. Yeah, it was crazy to me that that's illegal because that's what a registry's for. The NCAA said it was illegal, so I'm not going to argue with anyone right now. I'm going to try and win a national championship and we'll open that book. The question to Guy came up because of a now-deleted tweet from his fiancée that said, "Hope you weren't planning on buying anything off there, the registry, because NCAA compliance said it was a violation, so I had to make it where only I could see it." What apparently started all of this was a blog post on Busted Coverage. Founder Joe Kinsey realized that anyone could access the registry and buy gifts for Guy and Jenkins and decided to share it with the blog's 100,000 Twitter followers on Monday. A harmless act designed to help Guy and his fiancée Jenkins. A couple of days later, he tweeted out that someone from the University of Virginia had told him to take the post down. From the Washington Post, the cease and desist, which was shared with the Washington Post, read in part, "The university is requesting that you immediately remove the wedding registry link. The receipt of items from the registry could constitute an impermissible extra benefit. By posting these items, you're jeopardizing the student-athlete's eligibility for competition. NCAA rules stipulate college athletes are not permitted to receive extra benefits, blah, 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 nonsense, amateurism, all that stuff." It is nonsense. We live in a... If you want to go to the fact that, okay, everybody should be under this guise, this stupid, nonsensical realm of amateurism, if you want to say that everybody should be entitled to the same benefits, okay, fine. Sharing the registry, that sucks, and it's a weird little loophole that might be against the NCAA's rules, stupid as they are. Mm-hmm. But if you're gonna punish for the letter of the law like this on a... Are you kidding me?
That's awful.
It's so transparent. It's so obvious.
It's so clear.
We live in different times now. Everything is everywhere. The internet exists and is accessible to all. What the hell is going on? It is such pure nonsense. The NCAA needs to die.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Be there Saturday and Sunday. The playoff-bound Chicago Wolves look to clinch their third straight division title. Both games full of great promotions. Free parking courtesy of Kia. Tickets start at $12. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for information. 25 years ago today, Kurt Cobain died.
Oh, wow.
25 years ago.
Wow.
Today. I mean, that is...
He was 27?
As so many musicians. I mean, that's like what Janis Joplin...
Hendrix.
It was Morrison?
I think it's Morrison.
They might have been a little older than that. But the 27 Club. Hendrix, Joplin, Morrison. But I don't know if Nirvana's music meant more to you because maybe you were a little bit younger. But it was...
Yes, indeed.
I remember how it felt when it hit. And when Smells Like Teen Spirit was making the rounds on MTV, you knew it. You knew everything was different. I have read stories where, like, all the guys in Van Halen looked at each other and said, "Yeah, we're done.
It's over.
It's over for us." The Motley Crue. This has been a theme of some of these like '80s rock stars who said they knew it. and the music still holds up today. We know what has with Dave Grohl, who was the drummer.
He was the drummer of Nirvana, right.
Has gone on with Foo Fighters and become
Queens of the Stone Age, a bunch of other projects.
An important musician in his own right, but that makes me feel really old that it was a quarter century ago that Kurt Cobain took his life.
7 or 8, I guess. I remember, and I don't know if I probably didn't see it live or whatever, but the break-in, the MTV News break-in, it was Kurt Loder, if I recall, who breaks in with the news about Kurt Cobain being dead. And I would imagine that it, in my lifetime, born in 85, so in my lifetime, Smells Like Teen Spirit, that album, never mind, that's the second, third most impactful album that's been released in my lifetime,
yeah,
changing the music industry almost completely?
You asked me off the air if I remembered anything quite like that. The answer is no. That I think because music was so weird the way it timed up with my youth.
Yeah.
I mean, being born in 69, a lot of the music that I listened to wasn't even considered quote-unquote classic rock at that point. It's just, you know, it was my parents. I was one of the first generations that listened to its parents' music. Where I saw that when I'm listening to the Beatles and the Who and the Kinks and the Rolling Stones, and you go down and the actual LPs from my parents' record collection that they had was, you know, there's Rubber Soul right there.
Yeah.
There's Elton John. And there's these where, so I was of the first generation that listened to the same music as my parents, because my parents' parents were listening to, you know, big band stuff and jazz and
Glenn
a lot of that.
Miller.
Right, rock and roll didn't really exist, but it was a seminal moment that here it was. The music was so good, so accepted, and still so in tune with the way that the teenagers were listening to things and feeling about themselves that it was significant in that way. But there were some great albums. I mean, Michael Jackson's Thriller was a
probably,
huge
yeah.
deal. For me, Peter Gabriel's So.
Okay.
Was a really meaningful sort of marking point of an album. Maybe Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms, but nothing like what what Nevermind and In Utero and particularly Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Nevermind changed music overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, like instantly.
Like hair metal was king, and then that came out and it was dead.
And they knew it.
And
they said
it.
So. They
it
knew
was,
it.
It was a knife in the heart of hair metal. Like, if you and you look at the bands, I just watched the Motley Crue thing on Netflix, and bands like that, they tried to, after that, say, oh my God, we all have to change.
Yeah.
And they all came out with, like, their grungy kind of album as, like, a last grasp, and it just didn't work.
It was so lame.
Right.
Yeah. There were albums that, personally, to me, were more affecting, but I think, you know, broadly speaking,
right.
Nevermind was probably the most impactful rock and roll album of the last, what, 30 years? 40 years?
Rock and roll, probably, yeah. Straight Outta Compton
changed it overnight.
Straight Outta Compton is another one that changed the industry and music taste in general. But I don't. That was 88, I think.
Well, for me,
so I was too young to really feel like Jay's talking about. It was overnight for Nirvana, and I don't know that it was necessarily. Oh, I think it took some time for Straight Outta Compton to really glom onto popular radio.
I'm talking rock and roll specifically.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
if you're
restricting it to the genre, then yeah.
If we're talking any music, the album that like a bombshell changed your life.
Mm-hmm.
It was Public Enemies. It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
Sure. What year was that?
That was 87.
Okay.
And when that came out, I said, well.
Life's different
now. Now things are different. And it wasn't only because the album came out. It's because they had the lyrics printed. There were liner notes, even in the cassette. In the cassette, all the lyrics were there.
Huh.
So you could, it was, you knew what he was saying, how he was saying it, how he was articulating all this stuff. And that's like, well, life is different now.
That is the Midday Midway. We are we're celebrating a holiday today, so we'll tell you what that is when we return.
Looking forward to that. Tyler Dunn had to reschedule, but I've got something. I'm going to do something that is going to make some people unhappy.
Oh.
I am going to take a rollicking self-congratulatory victory lap based on some information that was just revealed.
I didn't realize we'd schedule
this. I'm right. I was right.
God.
I am right. And I am so smart. I am so smart.
I hate it when this happens.
I am so smart.
Oh, that is really disappointing. So Dan's going to make you cry, and
yes.
I'll make you happy a little bit
yes.
when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
I am the smartest man alive!
damn right.
I hate it when we do this.
This segment's brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. So before I gloat,
I feel like Goose and Top Gun.
I'm going to say the table set up outside. That can mean only one thing.
Apparently it is National Deep Dish Pizza Day.
Yeah, as we mentioned during transition.
Which is a celebratory day for this show specifically because I turned y'all on the Art of Pizza.
Yeah, you did.
A couple of months ago.
You did.
And then the fine folks at Art of Pizza were nice enough to drop off a couple of pies, and I told you, I guess this is going to be an I told you segment. I guess that's what we're just going to do here.
Yep.
I told you that it was the best in the city, or at least my favorite, and they're going to stop by and bring some more around for National Deep Dish Pizza Day.
Yes.
Love the fine folks at Art of Pizza. Oh, God. They do it right.
It's a masterpiece in every slice.
That's what I'm saying. I've been telling you guys for a while now.
What did I tell you last week after watching just 3 days of Major League Baseball? I deputized the Bernstein and McKnight listener because we were seeing some things that looked strange, were we not?
A little strange. And I told you, I texted you the other night when I saw, who was it? Oh, the shortstop, Orlando Arcia for the Brewers hit one falling away from a baseball on the outer edge of the plate. That was a dinger that probably should not have been. Please tell me that someone smart has done the research of the ball being juiced yet again.
I told you the ball was juiced. Damn. This was just posted at Baseball Prospectus by none other than Rob Arthur.
That's our dude. Well, that's the nation's dude.
Yeah, that is also one of the foremost authorities on such things.
Uh-huh.
Headline, the baseball is juiced.
All right.
Parenthetically, again. It started when the normally reliable Chris Sale got lit up for 3 homers by the Mariners. It was part of a record number of taters that flew on opening days.
So many taters.
From Sale to Zach Greinke, taken deep by the handful. Then Christian Yelich hit a home run in each of his first 4.
Taters.
It didn't take long for fans and players to begin whispering and tweeting about the baseballs being juiced again. It is early yet for us to come to any definitive conclusion, but preliminary data shows the baseball has returned to its aerodynamic peak.
Hmm.
Whether it means the season will smash home run records like 2017 did remains to be seen. Before home run explosion over the past few years, no one worried much about the baseball's air resistance. MLB and Rawlings kept track of dozens of metrics to make sure the ball was consistent from month to month. They didn't measure drag. Drag is incredibly important in determining how likely a hitter is to knock one out of the park. As baseballs become more aerodynamic, they travel farther given certain initial velocity. Deep fly ball that might have been caught at the warning track and go into the first row. A 3% change in drag coefficient can work to add about 5 feet to a well-hit fly ball.
That's a lot of feet.
Which increases home runs league-wide by an astounding 10 to 15%.
Yeah.
It is possible to measure the aerodynamics of the baseball using the pitch tracking radars in place in the ballpark, calculating the loss of speed from when the pitch is released to when it crosses the plate. Now, we went through all this. We had Alan Nathan on when we were talking about last year. The current area has featured some large fluctuations in drag coefficient, leading to the explosion in 2016 and 2017, a dialing back of homers last year. Curious about the record-breaking home run tallies in the last few days. This is Rob Arthur. I use the same methodology to measure the aerodynamics of baseball so far in 2019. We are only a week in, but the drag numbers are among the lowest recorded in the last calendar year.
Perfect.
The current average drag coefficient is below the 95% credible interval. There were only a handful of 6-day stretches in 2018 that had drag numbers below what we're seeing now. Most were in late June and early July.
Yeah, all right.
So he goes on with a lot of gory math. Says it's not just fancy radar tracking indicating the baseball's flying through the air. Home runs per game is the highest it's been since 2017. It's remarkable considering we're in what is typically the coldest part of the regular season.
Yep. Remember all the rainouts we had last year? We were playing baseball last season, and now you got dingers leaving from left to right.
It is possible that this one-week drop subsides and the baseball returns to its 2018 levels. It's almost equally probable that the ball becomes even more slippery. Baseball's air resistance is something to keep an eye on for the remainder of the 2019 season. I'm right. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
I hate that you were right. I don't mind the home run rates going up. What I do mind is Major League Baseball trying to lie about it for absolutely no reason. So from that league-wide trend to another that we will discuss with Jonah Carey of The Athletic, that's coming up in just a few, our weekly, our Friday baseball hit with Jonah Carey when we come back in just a couple. It is what? You look like you've got a thing.
Yeah, the BBC is reporting that Chuck Berry has passed away at the age of 90.
Wow. A lot of music news today. Then.
Yeah. On the 25th anniversary of the death of Kurt Cobain, Chuck Berry has died.
Oh, well.
There's some interesting stories to be told about Chuck Berry, a seminal rock and roll performer.
Can we tell any of them?
Ew, no.
Great. Let's talk baseball with Jonah instead. That's next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.